Hello and welcome to the Essential Knowledge Updates, or EKU, podcast from the Royal College of General Practitioners. My name is Dr. Thomas Round and I'm the EKU Development Fellow for the RCGP. In this podcast, I will be talking to Dr. Louise Newsome, one of our most experienced EKU authors, who has recently written the EKU 11 module on the management of chronic pelvic pain from the Royal College of Obstetrics and Gynecologists guideline. How did you find this module?
Well, I actually learned a lot from it. When I initially had the title, I sort of thought, oh my goodness, this is going to be awful. But actually, I found it very interesting. And I think I didn't really know exactly how to define chronic pelvic pain. And I thought it was very interesting just to learn that it had to be over 6 months. And it could be either intermittent or constant. But I think most interesting is that it didn't have to be related to periods, because you always think chronic pelvic pain equals period problems in women, and it clearly doesn't. So I found it very interesting, and also a lot of it does talk about chronic pelvic pain is a symptom rather than a diagnosis, which I think is important for clinicians, but also to try and impart to our patients as well. It's actually written mainly for gynaecologists, but I think probably 80-90% of what's in there is still pertinent to GPs, you know, working in primary care without any special interest in gynaecology.
Typical patient comes in complaining of it. What are the kind of key features and the history and the examination and things not to miss?
I think the problem is with this chronic pelvic pain, as I say, because it is more of a symptom, there are so many different things that can cause it. And obviously the symptoms can vary as well, depending on what causes it. And also your investigations are going to change according to the symptoms and the type of patient. But I think, as I said, one of the big things is it has to be chronic, as in more than 6 months, and it may be related to menstruation or even intercourse-related symptoms, or it may not be. So I think taking a clear history is really important. A big thing that's really, I think, very important is not just a physical symptom history, but it's also the whole social and psychosocial side of the symptoms is really important. Not just how they're feeling with the pain, but how it's actually affecting their life. And it does say about a current level of function with chronic pelvic pain, because it does seem to impact hugely on women's life. So it does list a whole possible causes of pelvic pain, varying from endometriosis to even things like pelvic organ prolapse. So it's a wide range of conditions, including, they even mentioned there's Bowel syndrome as well. Such a wide range, that's why it's very important to try and narrow it down for the woman. So then obviously they still recommend an abdominal, pelvic and internal examination, which is sensible. Then obviously the investigations, like I say, depend on the symptoms and any signs that you might find on examining. They do recommend to take genital swabs for really all women who are sexually active, so even people that maybe might deny having a sexually transmitted infection, it might be worth still testing. And they even say, which is something that I find quite difficult, that the absence of a result positive for chlamydia or even gonococcus doesn't rule out the diagnosis of pelvic inflammatory disease. So they are suggesting, even if your swabs are negative but you have that suspicion, then they should be referred to a GU clinic. So then moving on to investigations, I think the first line really would be a transvaginal ultrasound, which most GPs can access very easily. What I think was quite interesting for me was that a diagnostic laparoscopy is no longer the gold standard. And certainly 15 years ago when I did my obs and gynae job, everyone came in and had a diagnostic laparoscopy who had pelvic pain. So it's obviously shifted a lot. So I think that's important, and important for us to be able to tell our patients so they have realistic expectations of what investigations they might have.
Yeah, I thought that was very interesting. So yeah, because it was previously viewed as the gold standard test, but obviously looking at the guideline from recent research, that around 50% of diagnostic laparoscopies are negative, and even if you do find pathology, it might not be the cause of the pain.
I think that's really important, isn't it? So someone might have, for example, endometriosis, it might be found on laparoscopy, but actually that might not be the cause of their pain. And this is the message throughout the whole module, really, I think, is trying to explain that there are so many other issues, and again, the psychosocial aspects seem to be very important. And even chronic pelvic pain is more common in women that unfortunately have had episodes of sexual abuse in the past, depending on how you know your patients. But it is saying that people should probably have longer consultations and try and explore these issues, because it's the way that the pain affects them. And a lot of the psychosocial side obviously has a big impact on pain, as we know in general. But obviously in chronic pelvic pain, it seems to have a big effect.
I certainly find these consultations quite difficult in sort of a 10-minute initial consultation. So often, I'm sure you probably agree that, like other GPs,
yes,
I'd initially consult the patient about the pain, take a history, and then bring them back for swabs and maybe ultrasound if required, or further tests.
I think it's a multi-stage process to diagnose, and also trying to educate the patients. And there are some really good patient information leaflets about chronic pelvic pain that are available now. So I think it is very important for women to be aware that there might not be a cause, an obvious cause for their pain, or there might be two or three causes for their pain. And also, we might not be able to treat it, but we might be able to, hopefully, we will be able to help manage the pain so that they can improve the level of function that they have and carry on, you know, their life with it rather than being ruled by it.
And what sort of management options would you normally try, kind of initial options?
Well, obviously, again, depending on the cause, there's some things like irritable bowel might respond to antispasmodics or even a change in diet. But if they think it's related to their periods in any way, this is where the guidance, I think, probably falls down a bit for general practitioners, because although it suggests using the combined pill or progesterones, which is something we could use, it does say about using danazol or GnRH analogue for 3 to 6 months. And then considering having a diagnostic laparoscopy, whereas I think most of us wouldn't prescribe that in primary care. So that would be something that would be instigated by a gynaecologist.
It recommends we could try hormonal treatment like a combined pill or progesterone-only pill or even a marina coil, it does say, which I read for 3 to 6 months. The kind of question we'd have is, when would you refer? But I guess you would do your initial consultation. You might bring the patient back for swabs, an examination, maybe some further tests, either bloods or ultrasound if you think required, and maybe treat for 3 to 6 months with a pill if there wasn't a clear cause or a worrying cause.
Well, that's right. Obviously, they do mention the red flag symptoms, so things like new bowel symptoms over the age of 50, pelvic mass, excessive weight loss, irregular vaginal bleeding, that sort of thing. Obviously, people need immediate referral rather than us just doing the investigations in primary care. For us as general practitioners to group all these women together who have got chronic pelvic pain, because it's very hard to just put them in a box and treat them all the same, because clearly you can't. And that's another thing I think that I've learned a lot from the module. The other thing it does say under management that women should never be left feeling that nothing more can be done to help them, so they should always be given information, education, they should feel supported. And you know, obviously the pain clinic can help, but even just reviewing them and making them know that they're not alone, I think, is important too.
You also mentioned in the module about maybe considering looking for neuropathic pain and neuropathic pain treatments.
Yes, I think if it's thought that it might be a nerve entrapment or nerve type pain, then they do suggest using amitriptyline or even gabapentin, which I think it would be worth a trial in general practice, certainly a 3 months trial to see if it makes any difference. But obviously, if these measures don't help, then a specialist pain clinic would be advisable.
And have you taken any of this learning from this module into your practice?
Yes, it has actually. I think I generally see a fair amount of women, being female myself, and I think it has sort of embraced me, probably just given me more confidence really to make a diagnosis of chronic pelvic pain and not being, like you say, afraid to know that there might not be a diagnosis. And I think holding women's hands a bit more, and women become very scared. And I think there's been a lot about, for example, ovarian cancer, early diagnosis of ovarian cancer, and women seem to fall into two groups. There's those that are in denial and don't, or they don't know anything about ovarian cancer, or those that just think that that's all they've got is ovarian cancer. They've had a bit of bloating, or they've had a bit of pain, and that's it. They're going to die. They've got ovarian cancer because they've heard all the publicity about it. So actually, for them, they're really relieved to know that they have got they've got chronic pelvic pain. We maybe don't know the cause of their pain, but they haven't got ovarian cancer. So I think it's very important to find out maybe the women's underlying concerns as well, because they vary so much.
Just linking with ovarian cancer, so you would obviously think that would be more of a possibility in obviously older patients with potentially abdominal distension, or IBS type symptoms which hadn't been there before, in that sort of case, would you then do a CA125 or just a scan? Or,
well, this is where it can be a bit contentious, can't it? Because NICE guidelines are very clear about doing CA125 before a scan, whereas I think some of the gynaecologists would recommend both together. So I think, again, it depends on the age of the patient and their symptoms, but it's really important. And I think the big thing about abdominal distension is the persistent abdominal distension or persistent bloating, because a lot of women complain of bloating. And I think more and more when you actually ask, does it come and go or is it there all the time? Most people say, oh, no, it comes and goes. And you can be immediately reassured that it's very unlikely that they have got ovarian cancer as long as they haven't got any other symptoms.
I guess another thing that worries GPs is when to refer and to refer appropriately for these cases. So do you think this guideline potentially would help you to manage more cases in primary care?
Yes, I think so. I think that is important to know that there isn't a rush, for example, to have a diagnostic laparoscopy, which I think before I did the module, I thought maybe more people would need to have one. So, and like I say, all GPs can really access a transvaginal scan, and it can do a CA125 if appropriate. So, and obviously can do swabs. So I think a lot more can be done in primary care. That's right. So then people can become more confident as to who they refer appropriately.
You are listening to EKU 11 podcasts from the Royal College of General Practitioners.